Welcome to a very special episode of the TV Dudes. I'm Grant, and today I'm going to be discussing The Leftovers. In particular, The Leftovers Episode 8, which is called International Assassin of Season 2. And we actually haven't been discussing The Leftovers the past few weeks on the show, on the regular podcast, because, well, I mean, there's been a lot of other television to discuss. Been having new shows pop up here and there, and just trying to cover those, check those out, keep up to date on all these other shows, Fargo and Walking Dead, and just a ton of television that's going on right now. And I don't want that to seem like I'm leaving out The Leftovers, like I'm not keeping up to date and watching it. And maybe Greg and Randy are not as in tune with this show and like religiously devoted in a funny way to the show, but I am a bit of a fanatic. This is hitting all those right triggers for me that it did with Lost. It's just what Lindelof does. And yet I think this also has a much more mature vibe, especially in a lot of the subject matter that it seems to be tackling. And each week, I think there's a bunch that I could unpack about the symbolism, about speculation and theory, about how they decide to tackle a certain scene, lighting, color choices, all of that. But this particular episode, episode 208, which is once again called International Assassin, takes the show on a whole different level. This is the episode where Kevin Garvey, after making a pact with Virgil, the guy who lives on the outskirts of Miracle, that Virgil would basically temporarily kill Kevin so that he could go into his own psyche, into this other realm, and do battle, as he put it, with his demon, which is Patty from the GR, that he would temporarily put him out and then bring him back to life. And that was the cliffhanger of episode 7. And episode 8 of this season, we get an entire episode dedicated to that dream state, that state of unconsciousness, that state of purgatory, however you want to define what we are seeing in this episode. It was very excellently done, and I wanted to kind of go through it and discuss a lot of what I was seeing, a lot of what I was speculating on, a lot of what I was reading other people were picking up in the show and were kind of pointing out. So I guess on that note, first off, I'd like to give credit to a lot of other articles that have written about this, and as well as the Reddit subreddit for The Leftovers, which I was reading through, and a lot of people were pointing out some great stuff. That said, let's go ahead and start discussing a lot of what we are seeing. First off, one of the most interesting things is the episode starts with Kevin emerging out of a bathtub filled with water, and that is his sort of spiritual birth into this purgatory realm that we're experiencing. And at first, it wasn't clear that this is what we were seeing. It was like, okay, so somehow he had that incident occur, and Michael came into Virgil's trailer and dragged Kevin out. Maybe this is him like awakening at some point back in the real world after the poison and whatever else. And it isn't until he steps out of this bathtub and walks over to the closet that we see this particular quote written on this little brass plate on the door. And it's suddenly clear that this is not reality as we know it. And the quote was, "Know first who you are and then adorn yourself accordingly," which, looking it up online, this is a quote by Epictetus. I'm not going to pronounce that correctly, but it was written by this guy in reference to purgatory itself. So that is our first kind of guide to what we're seeing. And As an aside, I think it's interesting what The Leftovers does in that it very much knows that it's playing, toggling this line between it, all of its mystical elements, all of these bizarre occurrences. Either you could read into that as the supernatural elements that they could be, or you could read into this from a very pragmatic viewpoint, I guess rational explanation that you could kind of derive from every sort of incident. And I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I think that's very much the intent of the creators, of Lindelof and his team, to leave it ambiguous that either this is actually genuinely occurring, he is going into this world and fighting, or this is all a part of Kevin Garvey's mental state, that he is that we're kind of seeing some visual manifestation of it for the audience, but this is him just kind of battling his demons and coming to grips with some emotional hangups that he has post the October 14th disappearance, or in relation to just how he kind of copes with grief in general. That said, he comes to this closet, and in the closet we are presented with four costumes that he has an option to choose from. They are a police uniform, a Mapleton police uniform, probably his actual uniform for when he was the chief of police in Mapleton in the first season. They are a business suit, a priest's robes, and they are a GR outfit, the Guilty Remnant outfit, which is just like an all-white outfit. And you can kind of look at these costumes as potentially the four aspects of Kevin Garvey, I guess, how he kind of sees himself. Does he see himself in his profession as this protector, this cop? Or does he see himself as a GR, as a Guilty Remnant? He makes a reference later in this episode to why he smokes, and he smokes to remember, and that is very much in line with the GR, and it seems to be a truth that he speaks that surprises himself, that he doesn't recognize that he does in some way identify with the GR and what their movement was all about. So is that what he feels represents him, the priest? Is that a little bit more identifying with what he views as his spiritual side? Or is the business suit, which once he does choose, we are revealed that it's not just a business suit, it's actually the suit of an assassin, an international assassin, hence the title of the episode. So that is the one he chooses. And it's also kind of like, if you think about it, the cop uniform could represent order. He could take a path of order in order, or restoring order, I guess, in order to kind of face down Patty, do battle, and face his demons. He could take the option of the priest, which could be the spiritually self-righteous, the holy, the saved. The GR could, in contrast, represent the damned, the guilty remnant, obviously, the individual who kind of lives and wallows in the shame, and accepts that and doesn't need to move beyond it, or the one he chose, the assassin's outfit, which is a bit more indicative of chaos. He becomes sort of this agent of chaos. And it's interesting that once he kind of chose that, how that dictates the rest of the action in the episode. The robe, as a special note, is pointed out that it contains the Alpha and the Omega symbols actually on the robe. So a nice little nod to the beginning and the end as far as how he would view himself in the priest role. And in other parts of this episode, we actually see there's a brief moment where he gets out of the elevator after killing the first version of Patty, which we'll get into in a little bit. And we see a person wearing his exact Mapleton cop uniform with a bag over their head being escorted down the hall by the Guilty Remnant. and he just kind of walks by them, kind of casually looks back, a little bit confused, but just Kevin doesn't address the guy. But are we to read into that that is potentially another path that he chose and in his mental state and was processing that we as the viewer are not following along with? So he did try the option of the police and or the cop that it rather, and it didn't pan out for him. Obviously he's being led away in a hood by GR. We can kind of infer from that path goes poorly. And then another thing to note is when he gets into the elevator with the priest, there's a priest wearing similar priest robes, and that person looks very concerned, like something is not going well for him as well. That one wasn't the exact same priest robes that we see Kevin find in the closet in the very beginning of the episode, but that could play into this idea that the priest robes are a common character, I guess, archetype that anyone that is going through their own spiritual journey within this shared purgatory might also endure. And I guess that would also point to this purgatory itself being a shared purgatory. So it's interesting to kind of see him navigate this and see other people in this hotel space also trying to navigate this purgatory. Another special note, this is more of a fun Easter egg, but when he's in that elevator with the priest, you can get a brief glimpse of the carpet, and the carpet has the same notable famous pattern of carpet as in The Shining, the hotel in The Shining. So a little nod to that. I guess that's a little bit fitting in that this is supposed to be purgatory, and Shining was this sort of cursed hellscape, I guess, that brings out the demons in Jack in that movie. And similarly, Kevin's facing his own demon, Patty. And adding to this idea that this is a shared purgatory space, we have Virgil. The name is clearly not coincidental, as this guy's acting as a bit of a spirit guide for Kevin in this Dante's Inferno-esque purgatory, where he has to navigate it and figure out what to do. And Virgil is now living in this space, living in quotes, and that is a nod to the fact that he shoots himself in the head in episode 7, like right after he commits suicide, right after letting Kevin drink the poison and assuring him he would revive him. So that's not something that Kevin would necessarily put together, but it's interesting for us, the viewer, to kind of read into it. So is this a sort of, in the back of Kevin's mind, a recognition that something happened to Virgil after he himself collapsed, so that he knows that Virgil's also dead? Or if we want to take the more supernatural route, and this is an actual shared space, that we recognize that Virgil is also in this space. And Virgil makes a note about the water in this, I guess I'm going to keep referring to it, the hotel as a purgatory. And he says, "Don't drink the water," basically implying, I don't recall if he actually outright says it, but that it makes you forget, it makes you complacent. It basically allows you to accept your fate and death. And so you'll no longer pursue your mission, which Kevin's mission is to kill Patty. But other people also seem to have their own personal desires. And Virgil himself is a person that ends up eventually drinking the water and kind of loses sight of what he was doing to act as a spiritual guide for Kevin. Whether or not Virgil drinks the water after kind of fulfilling his destiny of what he could initially point Kevin in the correct direction for, or if it was that water in this realm represents death itself And by drinking that water, he kind of has accepted his fate, accepted that he is dead. And this is the next phase of his being, I suppose, which it, that allows us to also kind of reflect again on what water symbolizes in this realm, because if we recall in the very beginning of the episode, Kevin emerges from a bathtub full of water, and if he's coming forth out of that water, and water is a conduit toward a sort of death in this purgatory, a forgetting of yourself, then he's kind of being, he's escaping death in the beginning as he emerges into this world, or it's a pathway from his death in real life to his death in purgatory. And there's an interesting play of elements within this episode, because at the end of the episode, we see that he emerges from the earth. Like, he's been buried. Michael had buried him, perhaps not 6 feet under, but a little bit underground in the woods. And he climbs out of that. So he emerges from earth, from dirt, that is, you know, into the real world. And that is kind of playing on, I guess, earth itself acting as a resurrection element. We see fire in the episode as this sort of portal within the world toward reality, toward real life, because he ends up coming across a communication via the television where his father, Kevin Garvey Sr., is in a hotel and trying to communicate it with him, and he references this fire that's burning in his hotel, which has somehow allowed him to reach into this purgatory realm and speak to Kevin himself. So if water is death, then fire could presumably represent life. We also see fire in the fire bins on the bridge once Kevin and a little girl version of Patty travel to the entrance to Miracle, that going across the bridge, there's all those barrels of fire. And if those could be looked at as a portal toward life, then that bridge is his access point to where he can escape death. And I guess follow that path toward the well and back to life. If we kind of linger on the water again, we also see that he saves initially the little girl version of Patty from water, from drowning. And then we kind of move from there to him pushing her down a well and then drowning her again in water. So drowning her in death. We see Patty, the politician, the senator version of her, discussing how she never touches this stuff, never touches water. And either that is, you know, once again affirming that she herself is going through her own quest in this purgatory, or if we're to assume that Patty has accepted her fate, then that is a reflection of that version of Patty actually genuinely being a doppelganger, whether or not we want to buy that, or if we thought she was lying and it wasn't actually this doppelganger that was cut to made to look like Patty. So we have the three of the four elements covered. We have water, which I'm suggesting is indicative of death. Fire, which is indicative of life, this kind of portal to the real world. Earth, which is this representation of resurrection, I suppose. I'm not really sure. Or reality, the real world, it could be, potentially. And air. We see air is breathed in to little girl Patty's lungs when he brings her back to life. And also, interestingly, someone pointed out that the logo of the hotel itself, where he's staying, he takes a look at this little brochure, and the logo for the hotel is a symbol that has a triangle with a line going through it. And someone pointed out that is the symbol for air. It's an alchemical symbol for air. So the hotel itself and purgatory are sort of represented by the element of air. And anyway, I mean, this is just kind of how you want to read into the symbols that play into this episode, but very much believe that at least some of these were definitely used intentionally. Moving on, if we look at this one point when Kevin is talking to Kevin Garvey Sr. in the hotel, there's another point where the television comes on and there is a report of a man in Australia who's claiming that he had been resurrected. And when he emerged from his this cave that he was in, or a cavern, that he was claiming that he was actually in a hotel the whole time. They mentioned in the background on the TV that this guy's name was David Burton, and this was taking place in Perth, Australia, I believe. And this is interesting because, he's saying that he's having a similar experience on that news report to what Kevin's actually going through, and if that was a real life news report about this guy, David Burton, resurrecting, going through this similar experience, then that kind of lends credence to this being a shared realm, and also that maybe this guy that Kevin encounters on the bridge was actually supposed to be this David Burton character that we see in this television report. Because he also happens to have an Australian accent. He seems to be wise and knowing. And the fact that this guy resurrected via a cavern, I mean, you can draw the biblical references there as well. But there was this point where Kevin went to Virgil and asked him where he would find a well. And he was saying, we have one for a cavern. Are you sure you don't mean a cavern? Which is another neat little nod to the news story. So kind of reinforcing, I guess, where the creators wanted to go with that little tidbit of the storyline. And speaking of the well, so this well is where Kevin decides he needs to take Patty, the young kid version of Patty, and push her in the well. To kind of kill her and be rid of her. And this comes from his dad. His dad comes on the TV and actually tells him, you need to take her to this well, and that's where you need to kill her. You don't need to like shoot her in the head, as Virgil is suggesting with the assassin role. So Kevin has to hunt down this well, and nice little nod, the flowers that are delivered in the very beginning, they come with that card that says get well soon, and it's actually this card that has a picture of the same well that Kevin encounters later in Miracle when he goes there. This also leads me to want to make a little point. When Kevin is on the bridge, he's talking to the Australian guy who I'm currently referring to as David Burton, and the Australian guy takes him aside and whispers in his ear, and he's whispering something that us, the audience, can't hear, and who Patty is not able to hear, but it's enough that makes you kind of curious what he might be telling Kevin that would be relevant to the show going forward. And my speculation, as well as others online, is that he was actually informing Kevin that the well is where he should look to find the girls that went missing in the town. Because maybe Kevin has this, like, he has some sort of knowledge of this subconsciously, but the three girls that went missing in Miracle, they might have potentially fallen in this well right before an earthquake happened and covered it up. Very similar to the very first episode where the cave-in happens because of an earthquake and people get covered up. So, I mean, these narrative parallels are very much intentional, and I suspect that that's the information that he was given ahead of us, the audience, and that we'll find out, especially since we have two episodes left, and that would be a plot point that would need to be resolved in this season. With two episodes left, like finding them. And I guess if the end of the episode had an additional earthquake, that that might be either they are unearthed there, or Kevin, who in episode 7 gave his handprint away to John Murphy, and he's going to be outed anyway pretty soon, he might actually have the key to finding those girls if he goes, wait, you know what? It's actually, I think there was this well, and they might have fallen in that well and then gotten, and maybe they're alive. You know, there's water in there. If it's, you can survive on water, but it's also potentially, there's a potential that those girls killed themselves. I was reading some of these theories actually about the girls that they seemed oddly disillusioned. In that very first episode, you see them playing in that pool or in the river, and they're splashing and having a good time when they're in front of someone else. But when they drive alone in that car, they all become very quiet and somber and just staring straight forward. Like there's a secret shared depression to how they're feeling. So maybe they were in a death cult, or maybe something else was going on with them that we're not fully aware of. And that whole running through the woods liberated is like them kind of getting one little last breath of life before they all kind of fall through with this death pact that potentially they had. I don't know. But that's something to, I guess, keep an eye on. So now I wanted to move on and talk about Patty. So Patty we see in three iterations in this episode. The first Patty that we're presented with is this senator version of Patty, and that's the first version that, well, I guess, I mean, excluding the little girl that he ends up saving. We actually first see the little girl, and he goes and saves her from the pool, but we have his assignment, his godfather-esque assignment, Kevin's, is to go and assassinate Senator Patty. And he goes to this hotel room where, you know, we get to see him encounter Holy Wayne and what's her name, Gladys, from the GR, the lady that they themselves stoned to death in order to shock everyone else. Yeah, so these two people seem to be the guardians, I guess, of Senator Senator Patty. I don't remember her last name. I can think about it, but I'm not gonna. Anyway. So when he ends up killing this version of Patty, we get the ongoing storyline that there's the little girl also is a version of Patty. And then we get the third version of Patty, which after he pushes the little girl version in the well, the one I guess that we might consider the genuine, the real Patty, the one that's not so much a persona, emerges at the bottom of the well, and he eventually drowns her as well. And I saw it suggested that these could potentially be the three representations, Freudian, I guess, representations of Patty as the id, the ego, and the superego. If we were to look at her as a senator as being the superego, or if you want to take the Lacanian sort of approach, that is the symbolic version of Patty, whereas the child sort of represents the id, or the imaginary version of Patty, this sort of idealized but not in the symbolic sense, but this imaginative playful one, whereas the aggressive superego one is the senator. And then we get the actual ego, or, you know, the real version of Patty in the bottom of the well. And he kind of has to go through and address killing her three times in order to fully erase what she represents from him, his own personal demons. And you know, you can look at this one way, that he's actually killing Patty herself, but if it is that he has taken and manifested his own demons, his own problems with confronting pain and guilt and loss, that he's made Patty the representation, the physical, I guess, manifestation of that, then this is Kevin himself having to kind of come to grips with his own pain, his own inability to address these issues, and looking at what she's complaining about, she feels powerless. She feels tied to Neil, who is her husband, her ex, that she couldn't escape someone who was domineering of her, and in a way, I guess Kevin feels that same pain that he lost his family, and he doesn't want to go through that again with Nora and his daughter, because he's going through a psychotic episode similar to his father, that he talks to these inner demons and his inability to address his own pain. And this is actually tied into earlier in the episode, where we see that he's taking a lie detector initiated or instituted by Gladys and the GR, who are the watchers of Senator Patty. And he goes through all those questions, and at the end, as they're removing the lie detector from him, they kind of casually ask him if he wants any water, and he says he isn't thirsty, and that turns out to be a lie. If, once again, we are to read that water represents death, then that is him lying about, you know, wanting death. In a way, he does have a death wish. He kind of wants to put an end to all of this pain that he's feeling, and yet he still is striving, I guess, to live for, I guess, his family, for Nora, for the sense of obligation that he still has. And so, you know, he's kind of toggling between those two things. Also, in reference to the lie detector, someone pointed out that the whole Windex in the eyes thing was an idea that he's giving himself a self-examination, and he has to kind of open up to himself about the truths of how he actually feels and things, and the Windex is trying to help him see more clearly, as, you know, Windex cleans windows. I thought that was kind of an interesting observation. So we also get this little note of this bird that's in the lobby, and this is interesting, especially with the end that we see Kevin resurrect in the woods, because previously in the season we have seen Erica go out into the woods in Miracle, and she will pull up a box with a bird inside of it, and at one point the bird flies away from this box, and another time you see a pile of dead birds that she's been burying birds, and they've been, I guess, entering this purgatory state, and then they might resurrect, they might not. So this bird that's flying around the hotel is sort of this one of these birds that I guess that she would have put into this hotel, and everyone else that's in the hotel is trying to kill the bird, and so this is the bird fighting for its chance to survive and resurrect. But we do see, you know, once again, that he resurrects in those very same woods, we can either read into that as, you know, something happened and the poison didn't fully take. It was one of those poisons that just kind of slows his heart rate, but he never actually dies, and it's just something that needed to wear off over time. Or there's magic in the woods outside of Miracle, and he actually does resurrect, just like that bird in the box. I was pointing out earlier, I was having a discussion with some people and saying, you know, the bird doesn't necessarily have to resurrect. It could have been read any number of different ways. It could have been that the injured bird takes in less oxygen, that maybe she didn't do the correct didn't do the correct math on how much air the bird would need in order to survive for that many days, or maybe, you know, she wasn't the only one monitoring those birds that she was putting in the box. Apparently her father or father-in-law, I'm guessing father-in-law, Virgil was aware that she was burying these birds in there, and he had offered her birds in another episode. So maybe he was also aware, and he could have dug up the bird and replaced it before she came back. in order to make her believe in these miracles. I mean, there's any way to kind of read a lot of these mysteries in the show. I don't think they ever want you to just believe one particular version. I think they leave it, like I said at the beginning of this episode, they leave it ambiguous so that either you could be a believer or you could be a skeptic, and it's okay. This is all a sort of a journey for how one wants to read into the show. The last point I wanted to kind of touch on is that we see all of these characters in the episode, or in this purgatory, and we get to also see Mary is in the background. We never actually see her face, which is a shame for the actress. She's a great actress. She's also from West Wing, and she doesn't get a whole lot to do since she has to play basically a comatose person in this series for the past two seasons. But there's some balloons that are being delivered to her, and they're baby boy balloons. And so if we read into that from the supernatural standpoint and not just this being part of Kevin's specific psyche, then she herself is in within that comatose state, is in purgatory, is in peril. Perhaps, I mean, she's part alive, or she's maybe part brain dead, and she's not fully there. And it's kind of dark to kind of, I guess, explore and think about what the creator's intent was, I guess, in including her in that scene. But overall, this is a very, like I said, this is a very dense episode, and this is very much me going off the deep end and wanting to discuss and analyze and parse through all of the symbolism, all of the mysteries and threads that are kind of being dumped on us, the audience here. How this all kind of ties together. And it was funny that right before Virgil sort of puts Kevin under, has him drink the poison, Kevin asks if anyone else had ever gone through this, and he says, "Yeah, the crazy guy who's living in the tower," and that's not a great selling point for what you want to go through. But in reference to that David Burton, Australian guy from Perth, character, maybe the guy that's on the bridge as well. We see earlier in this season that the son Michael was picking up letters from this guy, and that guy wanted to write these letters and send them to someone in Australia. Maybe it was the exact same guy, and I wouldn't be surprised if we actually get to go see and talk to the guy in the tower, the crazy tower guy, as well. A lot going on in this episode. I would love to hear y'all's thoughts on this episode as well. If you guys want to put them in the comments, we have two episodes left, and given how much I got excited and really wanted to kind of delve into the crazy mysteries and intricacies of this particular episode, I wouldn't be surprised if I do this for the last two episodes, but I absolutely would love to engage in discussing this with you guys in the comments, so please post them and let me know what you guys think. Did I go a little bit too crazy on this? Or is this something that is interesting for me to unpack on mic and for you guys to listen to? I don't know. Let me know, and I appreciate you guys once again. Tune in next week for our regular podcast, and until then, Dudes out.